If you want to take out your Bibles and open up to Ephesians chapter 6. This afternoon, I want to take some time and talk about, I entitled it A Garden Marriage. You'll understand that idea here in a minute. There's a parallel in marriage with Jesus. We grasp it a little bit easier as seeing Jesus as the husband. Because he comes to this earth as a male. We see him leading people. We see him setting the example. That side of the marriage as a husband imitates Jesus is not quite so hidden. The part that becomes a little bit more hidden, I think, is seeing Jesus as the wife. We say, well, how could that be? I mean, he's a man. But I want you to see a paralleled relationship. I want you to see Jesus as a man who lives in subjection, just like a wife would in a relationship. And I want to maybe find it in a way that might sound a little abnormal. In Ephesians 6, verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. We see this idea and we say, okay, now he's talking to Jesus as a child, the subjection that he had with Mary and even his stepfather Joseph, if you want to think of it that way. We see that relationship. And Jesus submits himself fully to Mary and Joseph. We have that over in Luke chapter 2. But I want to go a step further. I want you to see Jesus as the Son of God, as a man who understands what it's like to be subject to someone else, to not do things in his own way completely, always being mindful of what is Jesus' will for me. What am I to subject myself to? How should I go about it? And I want you to think about the parallels between a father-son relationship, Jesus being the Son, with a husband and a wife relationship, of the wife being as submissive to the husband as Jesus was as God's Son to his Father. So as we read through some of the passages we're going to see today, the husband's side, maybe we can see it a little bit more clearly, but I want you to see that the wife's side can be seen just as clearly as Jesus subjects himself to the Father. In thinking about children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right, I can remember a time in college going over to a laundromat and seeing a young family there, a mother and two children. And in talking with her, she said, you know, I wouldn't give the world for my children. And in talking to her, I saw that they probably didn't have very much. And, you know, I went out to the car and I had a couple of mints or something. So I gave those to the kids and she was so appreciative. Now, it wasn't anything great. And she said, oh, I'm so thankful for that. And I remembered her statement, I wouldn't give anything. I wouldn't give the world for these children. She says, you know, they haven't eaten in 2 or 3 days. And my heart just sunk. Until she had the washers all loaded and she stepped outside of the laundromat out onto the sidewalk that was in front. She pulled out a pack of cigarettes and she lit it up. And I thought, you mean to tell me you wouldn't give the world for these children and they haven't eaten in 2 or 3 days? And you're willing to spend money on yourself that is not necessary for your selfish benefit, and you won't sacrifice for these children. I thought, that's despicable. That's wicked. And I thought, how many times in the parallel of having parents who should sacrifice for their children do we see complete neglect and realize how horrendous it is. And then to realize there's a parallel in the relationship with a husband toward his wife. If he will not provide and sacrifice for his wife, is he really any better than that woman? How many of you have been to a place where they sell merchandise? Maybe the mall, maybe Walmart. And seen children who run their parents. Seen children who want something and they throw the tantrum in the store until finally mom or dad says, "Fine, we'll get it for you. Just be quiet." Who's in control in the relationship? Who's being submissive to who? That's just as despicable and disgusting to see. And yet, how many times in a marriage relationship do you see a woman take the lead and not be submissive to her husband? It's just as despicable and wicked and ugly. You start to see that. We can see them in the father-son, parent-child relationship. We see them so clearly there. But whenever you start to realize there's a parallel in a husband and a wife relationship, it seems like we just put on blinders and go, "Oh, well, that really doesn't matter much." Who said that? Look over at Ephesians chapter 5. We're going to hit these really quick, and then we're going to go to the garden. Ephesians 5:22. "Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord." It's not hard. It's not difficult to read and understand. "Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord." It's a parallel statement with children. Obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Do you see much difference between those two? In practice? In principle? Not much. So we can see the parallels. Verse 23, "For the husband is the head of the wife." Shouldn't parents be the head of their children? Or has that been lost by the world that we're surrounded by? Maybe in turn lost by us, God's people. He says, "As Christ also is the head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body." Here's where husbands lack. We're no saviors. But I want you to notice what verse 24 starts with. Paul knew that too. "But as the church is subject to Christ, so also the wives ought to be to their husbands in everything." For some reason, we read these verses and it makes us tremor a little bit. Almost like, we'll say it, but be gentle with us, wives. Now to the husbands. Verse 25. "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her." Love your wives just like Christ loved the church. Husbands, sacrifice for your wife the same way that you see Jesus sacrifice for the body, for the church. "And he gave himself up for her." I read through this not too long ago and I thought, who has he given himself up to? Jesus didn't give himself up to the church. He gave himself up to God. That's who he offered himself to pay the price for the church, so that we could be bought. Verse 26, "so that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word." Are you getting the idea that the word should be a central part in our marriages? You can wash somebody and just use water and they are no cleaner whenever they come out. We take kids in the summer out on floating trips down the river. You can put them in the water and bring them right back out. And you want to know what they want to do after they get out of the river? Can we take a shower? Why? Because there has to be something better than just water to wash. That's why we use soap, hopefully. The idea here, the washing of water with the Word is what gives it power. Now, let me just illustrate to you, I'm going to call it genius, but it's better than that, that God has in this marriage relationship. Having a husband who is to sacrifice what he desires for his wife, and a wife who is called to submit to her husband. You come to see it solves every problem in marriage if even one of them will step forward to do what God is calling us to do. First example. Realize, you know what, we have some extra money in the bank. It's burning a hole in our pocket. Husband says, you know what, I think we need a new four-wheeler. Wife says, I think we need to go on a vacation. Now, wife says, vacation be fun, our family be together, it would be a good time to enjoy. The husband says, if we had the four-wheeler, we could go out together as a family, ride around, we got land already, everything would be wonderful. What happens? If the husband says, you know what, I'll sacrifice what I want, we'll go on the vacation. If the wife hears the husband and she says, you know what, I'll submit to what you want, you go buy the four-wheeler. We'll have family time together that way. You see how if either one of them will do what God called us to do, the problem gets solved with no difficulty? It's a pretty easy conversation. Don't have to raise your voice. Maybe the situation's different. Honey, you want to go to the mall with me? Oh, I'd much rather watch a sporting game on TV than do that. But I will sacrifice what I want for your betterment. Maybe husband says, no, I'm watching the ball game. I told you about this a week ago. And the wife says, okay, I'll submit to that. You stay home. Without rolling her eyes, without demeaning talk and chatter, let's make it a little more serious. What about in intimacy in a marriage? Kids are away. You're to yourselves. One says to the other, husband says, tonight's a great opportunity. Wife says, oh, it's been a long week. Hard week at work. Wife says, I'll submit. Or maybe the husband says, I'll sacrifice my desire. It works either way, doesn't it? That's the genius of God's wisdom. What happens if both people will go according to what they've been called to do? That's called marriage bliss. That's where things get really sweet. Now, how come we don't do that? It solves every problem. There is not one problem in a marriage it will not solve. Go home this afternoon. Work on it for an hour. Tell me if you come back with an answer that goes against that. The secret, I think, is found in the garden. I want you to look back. I want you to look at Mark chapter 14. Mark chapter 14, look at verse 32. Remember to look at the relationships. When you see Jesus address God as his Father, that's that father-son relationship that pairs the submission of a wife to a husband. When you see Jesus talking about sacrificing, there's the parallel of the husband in the marriage relationship. Here they are gathered together. They've already partaken of the supper. They've come over the ravine of the Kidron Brook. They're now in the Garden of Gethsemane. Verse 32. They came to a place named Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, "Sit here until I have prayed." And he took with him Peter and James and John and began to be very distressed and troubled. Have you ever had a time in your marriage where you were contemplating as a husband, is this a time where I should be sacrificing for my wife? Or as a wife to be contemplating, is this a time for me to be submissive? Those are the same questions that are going through Jesus' mind in the garden. Am I going to be submissive to my Father? Am I going to sacrifice myself for the betterment of my wife, the church, the body? Exact two same questions you will see that is on the mind of Jesus in the garden. I think if you ask most people, and I might be wrong on this, what are the two most difficult times in the life of Jesus? I think the top two answers would be crucifixion and in the garden. The garden is where the mindset is put in order with Jesus. Because whenever he comes out of the garden, he seems a lot more different, doesn't he? There's no more tears. He sets his mind in the garden, and then he endures the cross. We as husbands and wives have to set our minds, and we can see how to imitate Jesus, and then we can endure the cross that sometimes comes in our marriages. And that will only lead to a resurrection, not just physically, but even within our own marriages on this earth. Because some of our marriages need a resurrection because we haven't honored God. Notice, here they are, gathered around in the garden, very distressed and troubled. Verse 34. And he said to them, "My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch." Jesus' instruction to the 12, keep watch. I'm sure they were thinking, what are we watching for? We've come out here like this all the time. What's so different now? That was his instruction. Pray, watch. Verse 35. And he went a little beyond them and fell to the ground and began to pray that if it were possible, the hour might pass him by. What do you hear in that? Not sure if I'm ready for this. Is there another way? Wives, is there ever an inclination inside of you to second guess your husband? To say, is this really the way it has to be? Can it be a different way? Jesus understands the thinking because he knew it. He says, maybe we can put this off a little ways. Maybe we can wait a while. Look at verse 36. And he was saying, Abba, Father. See, here's that father-son relationship that parallels the wife relationship to the husband in subjection. Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Remove this cup from me, yet not what I will, but what you will. Wives, isn't there another way? Don't you know that, husband, you can change your mind here. You can do it different. All things are possible to you. What about a heart response from a wife? Just like to imitate Jesus. Yet not what I want, but what you want. That's what God calls wives to do. To imitate Jesus. If you notice also in verse 36, remove this cup from me. Husbands, do you ever have times where you don't want to sacrifice for your mate? Oh, does it have to be this way? Do I have to go to the mall? Do I have to give up the game? Can this cup be removed? Can I have something different where I don't have to sacrifice? Do you hear the husband and the wife in this prayer of Jesus? He is going through the same things of what I call the difficulties of marriage, where you decide and make up your mind whether you will honor God in this relationship or not. Will I sacrifice for her? Will I submit to him? Because that is the question. Let's make sure we see it clearly. If Jesus at this point in time chooses to say, Father, I will not do it your way, what would you call that? Would you call it sin? Would you call it wicked? Because that's the same choices a lot of Christian wives are making. We're saying, I don't want to do that. And they act like it puts them back to neutral. It doesn't. It puts us into transgressors. We've gone to lengths that we should not be going. What if husbands, Jesus at this point in the garden, says, you know what? The church really isn't worth it. I'm not going to go and I'm not going to bear this cup. What would you call that? Is it just neutral? It would be sin. And husbands, there are things that we never grasp. We're not talking about the ones where we miss the opportunities. We're talking about times where we know this is an opportunity to sacrifice and to choose her, and we turn away, and we pick something or someone else. That's sin. It would have been sin for Jesus, and if it had been sin for him, it would have been sin for us. But I want you to take note of what Jesus doesn't do. He doesn't choose those things. He petitions God again. And then he petitions God again. Sometimes in choosing to sacrifice, choosing to submit, we need help. And we call to God for it. And I want you to see a little bit more of the distress, of the trouble. Because that's where we are sometimes. Look over at the Gospel of Luke. Look at Luke chapter 22. Luke chapter 22, look down at verse 42. See something very similar. Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done. Here's the prayer again. Do I have to lay myself down? Do I have to submit to your will? Same questions. I want you to see God's response to a husband who says, I am going to set my mind to sacrifice for my wife. I'm going to lock in on it, and I'm not going to deviate from it. To see a wife that says, I will submit to my husband. I will be locked on it, and I will not change my mind for anything. Jesus decides. He makes his decision in the garden. Look at how God responds. Look at verse 43. Now an angel from heaven appeared to him, catch it, strengthening him. Are there times where we get weak in our marriages? We second guess whether we should submit or whether we should sacrifice for her? When you make up your mind to honor God in your marriage, He will strengthen you. I can't tell you how. In this instance, He sent an angel. He sent a messenger from heaven. But it strengthened him. It gave him the strength to carry through with the mindset. Look at verse 44. And being in agony, notice it doesn't reveal all the, it doesn't remove all the difficulty. He was praying very fervently, and his sweat became like drops of blood falling down upon the ground. Is it still difficult and hard? Yes. But you will be strengthened once you set your mind to imitate Jesus in your marriage. I want you to consider, we're not going to go through a whole bunch of these. I want you to consider imitating Jesus in your marriage. I want you to turn over another chapter. Look over at Luke chapter 23. Look down at verse 34. Remember these relationships. Verse 33, we'll go back one. When they came to the place called the Skull, there they crucified him and the criminals, one on the right and the other on the left. Sometimes you're not always surrounded by people who are encouraging you to do what's right in your marriage. Verse 34, what should be our attitude? But Jesus was saying, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Here is a wife who wishes that her husband would sacrifice for her. And she gets run over the top of, maybe on a daily basis, maybe on a weekly basis. What's her response after being treated like she has no value? Father, forgive him. Forgive him for it. Make sure I don't dishonor your word and turn away from doing what is right and submitting to him. Forgive him. How many wives have prayed that prayer? Husbands. You're leading in a tender and gentle way, and she will not submit to you. It makes you to the point of distress and grief, and you start to wonder, what should be my response to being treated this way? Father, forgive her. She doesn't get it. She doesn't know. There's your response. There's imitating Jesus in a marriage. You can look through so many examples of Jesus on the cross and see him back and forth. Husbands, you ever get mocked for putting your wife first? I can remember being a college student. We had a couple of older college kids, juniors, seniors, maybe even beyond there doing their master's work, and we'd hang around, play sports, and then one of the guys would say, hey, I got to go home. I got to go take care of my wife. What do you think our response was? Oh, he's whipped. He's whipped. He doesn't have a backbone anymore. We were mocking him. We were mocking him for doing what God called him to do. And we were wicked for it. Wives, when you say, I'm going to submit to this man, your girlfriends tell you, he doesn't deserve it. He doesn't deserve it. You should treat him the way he deserves to be treated. No, God called you for more than that. And sometimes the people you surround yourself with will only want to turn you in a direction that goes further away from imitating Jesus. Sometimes we're the mockers. You look through so many other verses. I want you to look down a little bit further. There's a time where Jesus is on the cross. And look down at Luke 23, look at verse 44. It was now about the sixth hour, and darkness fell over the whole land until the ninth hour. That's noon until three. Because the sun was obscured and the veil of the temple was torn in two. There are times in our marriages where we are unsure of the future. We don't know the outcome. God does. And His instruction doesn't change any. He doesn't say, okay, now it's okay not to sacrifice. Okay, now it's okay not to submit anymore. Even when you don't know what is coming. Because that's what happens with darkness, right? You don't know what's going on so well anymore. God's message stays the same. Imitate my son. And I want you to notice what to imitate. Look at the next verse. Verse 46. And Jesus, crying out with a loud voice, said, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. Having said this, he breathed his last. We're going to look at this spirit-like attitude. Father, this man is wicked. This man that I'm married to. But I will put myself in your hands. And I will be submissive to him. But I will only do what is right. God says, I'll strengthen you. I'll take you into my own arms. Husbands, she doesn't even care what you have to say anymore. She's sure not going to submit to it. What is God looking for from you? He's looking for the same thing that he found in his son. Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. I will still sacrifice for her. I will honor you in this marriage. I don't care about her response. I will honor you and I will imitate your son. Let me show you what happens when a husband or a wife choose to honor God in their marriage. It sticks out like a sore thumb. Look at the next verse. Verse 47. Now when the centurion saw what had happened, he began praising God, saying, certainly this man was innocent. Other gospel accounts say, certainly this is the Son of God. Other people see a husband and a wife that honor God, and it sticks out so different. And they say, oh, I wish I had that. I wish my husband was like that. I wish my wife was like that. I'm only imitating Jesus. I'm not getting this from any worldly wisdom. I'm not getting this from my peers. I'm trying to imitate him. Jesus set his mind in the garden. And we as husbands and wives in Jesus need to set our minds now if we have not already. We will endure the storm of the cross in our marriage. Sometimes it will come from our mate. And we have to act upon what we set our mind to do. I will submit. I will sacrifice. Here, too many times we stop looking at the story at this point. Wait 3 days and tell me what happens to Jesus. Resurrected from the earth. Have you ever noticed that the prophets talk about Jesus' body, that there would be no decay in it? When you strive to imitate Jesus in your marriage as a husband or a wife, you will grow stronger as you rely on the Lord. There will not be decay in you as long as you imitate Jesus. And God will raise you up. He will resurrect your marriage if it needs it, if it's not already living and well. All of a sudden, here's something that you never imagined. A blessing, a bliss. And the reason that it never came before is because a husband and a wife weren't dedicated to the Lord to imitate Jesus. I want you to notice one closing thought. Look over at Ephesians chapter 5, verse 1. This is what Richard read a little while ago. I think it was Paul's intention for there to be a connection from Ephesians 5:1 to Ephesians 5:22 through the end of the chapter about marriage. Tell me if you can see it. Ephesians 5, verse 1. Therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children. Imitate God. Imitate Jesus in your marriage. Because look at what he says in verse 2. And walk in love. Isn't it love for us to submit to our Father? Isn't it love for us to sacrifice for our mate? And walk in love, just as Christ also loved you and gave himself up for us. Do you hear the husband and the wife relationship in that verse? Loved you. He sacrificed himself. He submitted to his Father. He gave himself up for us. Us the church. Us the body. He said, I will do it. I will honor your will. Notice what that is seen as to God. An offering and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma. What if in our marriages we can have the aroma of Christ? And that's the aroma that we give off to God. Can you imagine having a moment where God sees us in the middle of a marriage, where as a husband he's not being submitted to, as a wife she's not being sacrificed for, but they are still offering themselves up to God to imitate Jesus in their marriage. And God the Father says, that reminds me of the scent, the aroma, the sweet savor of my Son. To remind God the Father of His Son. Is there anything better? Is there anything better that could be written on a tombstone? He imitated Jesus. She imitated Jesus. There's nothing better. And God will bless us in doing it. Look at your own marriages. Husbands, look at yourselves. Ask yourselves, am I really sacrificing for her? Or am I just doing my own thing? Wives, ask yourselves, do I listen to what he really wants? And will I submit to him? Will you imitate Jesus? That's the question. Will you imitate him? Will you take on his mindset in the garden?